I'm Pave, Sean Salisbury here for bringing authentic, real stuff to you. Hardcore opinion.
Sean Salisbury, a great NFL analyst, a former NFL quarterback.
To me, Tom Brady is the GOAT because he's done more with less than any player at that position we've ever had.
Welcome into Unpaved. I'm Sean Salisbury at Sean Unfiltered on Twitter. Like and subscribe to this show on YouTube at Unpaved Sean Salisbury. My partner Adam G. Sager on Twitter at Adam G. Sager, and my partner here will be along in just a second. But I hit this show starting coming out. It is high time we put assistant coaches in the Hall of Fame. We have a Hall of Fame. We have a writer's wing in the Hall of Fame. We got special teams players in the Hall of Fame. Rightfully so. Broadcasters 100% get it. Now, that doesn't mean it's not an exclusive group because it's an ultra-exclusive group. But the ones who deserve it need to be in. And that's why I say assistant coaches. You cannot look at me in the face and tell me that Buddy Ryan as a defensive coordinator didn't put up Hall of Fame-type numbers. Or that Hudson Howe, the great offensive line coach, with the Dallas Cowboys during their run, without him teaching that great offensive line, while talent always rules, you got to find somebody to maximize it. He should be in the Hall of Fame. There's Alex Gibbs. Dick LeBeau is in as a player, but as a defensive coordinator, he'd be in. I want you to think about this. And you know who's the poster child right now for assistant coaches? And there's a lot of deserving ones. That doesn't mean you give spots away. But if a guy's 87 years old and just finished coaching, started his NFL career coaching in 1977 and coached Terry Bradshaw. That gentleman right there, Tom Moore. And his good wife, Willie, who suffered a stroke recently and leads to Tom making a decision to retire. Now, let me explain to you, when you've been in coaching 62 years, 47 of those in the NFL, you've coached Manning, Brady, Bradshaw, maybe Kurt Warner. I think about our team when he was in Minnesota. It's one of the finest men and finest coaches in my career, and I've been around some far better coaches than I am a player. Defends his players, doesn't BS them, and you will never find a person who's been coached by or on a staff with or coached next to Coach Tom Moore that has anything to say but praise as a human. I'll never forget him just on his impact elsewhere. Couple of rookies were sitting around with hats on at lunch. Tom walked by, just tapped him subtly and says, "Phil, come on, man, we're eating meal. Take the hat off." That's how he lived. And he goes on, he was so good at making sure when I say protected, he said, "I'll always take the blame. I'll never put it on you." And he's, name me a time, not a self-promoter. The guy has been a phenomenal X's and O's, phenomenal human, phenomenal relationship coach. We've all had fun impersonating Coach Moore. Ask Peyton Manning to do Coach Moore. It's awesome. And I'm sure Tom gets a laugh at him. He smoked a few cigarettes, drank a lot of coffee, and was nothing better. There was no better person in the building than Coach Moore. I'm indebted to him for the impact that a short 3-year stint or so that he made with me, but it impacted me like I'd been in the league 30 years. Phenomenal, phenomenal human being and great football coach. And that's why I say that assistant coaches belong in. Steve Spagnuolo, think about what he did to the undefeated with his help from his four-man front with the Giants, to Tom Brady's undefeated team in New York in the Super Bowl. Think about what he's done in Kansas City. You're telling me a guy like Spags doesn't belong in the Hall of Fame when his career is over 5 years later? There's a big list of ones that we should at least consider. Tom Moore, 62 plus years of coaching, 47 of them in the NFL, 46, 47. I think this was his 47th year. As a coordinator and assistant coach, listen, it's not like Tom was chasing head coaching jobs. This has been a lifetime, other than a stint at the University of Minnesota, this has been a lifetime assistant coach who's impacted. Head coaches get all the credit, and quite frankly, they don't deserve all the credit. Right now, if you said Sean, and I'll just use a current coach, who's got a better Hall of Fame career on their resume, John Harbaugh or Tom Moore? I can make the argument Tom Moore does, and I think John, with all his winning seasons, what I'm saying is that's not to shrink John Harbaugh. He's just in the news. That's why I chose him. Tom Moore, think about the assistant coaches. We spend more, all these head coaches that have been doing it for a long time, they too were great assistants. That's why they got this opportunity. But Tom Moore, whether it's Super Bowl rings as an assistant, whether it's the people he's coached, how he's impacted people in the building, he is, like we have in football, man, basketball Hall of Fame, that if you've impacted in some way, this dude impacted players, coaches, everybody, and how to be a good human on the process. And the reason he's retiring after all these years, or Tom still would coach, is his good wife, Willie, had a stroke. And he said, she spent all these years letting me be selfish, and Tom's far from selfish, of doing it for Tom. And now he's taking a step aside so he can spend time with his good wife. This is an amazing man who gets it. And I just don't understand why the Hall of Fame resists great assistant coaches. Go find me a staff or a Super Bowl winning team that has shitty assistants. The greatest thing a head coach can ever do, aside from have talent and to be able to maximize it, is go find great assistant coaches. This guy spent 62 years in the game, even if he was a shitty coach, belong in the Hall of Fame, dealing with us as players. That's 62 years of being an impactful coach. Why do we just save it for the head coaches? Because I can assure you, every staff he's been on, he's impacted it in as many ways as anybody else on that coaching roster. So while I understand the head coach hires him, the assistant coaches, quite frankly, guys, I hate to tell you this, especially if the head coach isn't a play caller, offense or defense, while he's a head coach, impacts their players more than the head coach. You're around him every day, the X's and O's. The coach becomes the CEO and overseer, and a hands-on one, I'm sure. But as Tom Moore, we have got to champion the cause of these assistant coaches having their rightful place when they've earned it in the Hall of Fame. And there is no more deserving assistant coach in the history of this game than Tom Moore. Top shelf man, father, family man, coach, human being. Everybody has respect for Tom Moore. When that happens and you know he's impacted football, folks, he coached before you were, you've been in the womb generation after generation. Terry Bradshaw, Tom Brady, 87, and is still so sharp he could coach for five more years easily. God bless you, Coach Moore. I appreciate and love you and your impact. While short time in my life as a coach on our staff, but a big-time impact. Tom Moore belongs in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Let me tell you quickly about Augusta Precious Metals. And the reason why I say this is that, not giving you any sales speech, I'm just trying to make this, yes, they're a partner and they advertise, but I'm not here to give you the old go on and move product. I'm here to educate you. And so is Augusta Precious Metals. Now, when you start to look at it, as we move forward with this 2026 campaign and realize what gold and tangible assets and precious metals are doing, impactful, our debt in this country from past, but I don't care about the politics of it. I just know there's debt that's going to impact me, you, and anybody else. Now, if you got more money or got more security or got more confidence, it's a nice thing to have. But what's more valuable to you now, the way the dollar fluctuates and you're relying on Washington, or the way gold continues to rise in with its impact, its price, but also its security and investment and part of you having it tangible in your hands? Washington doesn't get to affect it. So why in the world aren't you making the switch? Go to text Sean, S-E-A-N, to 35052. Text Sean to 35052. And educate yourself. You'll see a quick read with the debt, but you'll see where gold's headed. I'm not here to tell you that you should be involved in gold. I'm here to tell you, if you're not, you're making a huge mistake with your confidence, self-worth. I mean, not self-worth, but your peace of mind. Hell, it may affect your self-worth and the confidence you have in retirement. Why not get started soon? Educate yourself, and you're going to say what I did. Why the hell did I wait so long? Augusta Precious Metals, APM. Augusta's Precious Metals. Click that link, Sean 35052 is your text, and Sean to 35052. Hit the link in the description below. You will not be disappointed. I don't know what you're waiting on. Get after it. Augusta Precious Metals will educate, inform, and quite frankly, the real simple thing, dollar, gold. You tell me, give me the precious metals and gold. Now's the time, and it's only going up. 2026 is your moving year towards Augusta Precious Metals. Let me bring my partner, Adam Sager, in. Sags, I've long, again, Adam G. Sager. I'm Sean Unfiltered on Twitter, Adam G. Sager on Twitter. Grateful to have Sags on as a partner. We've got a lot to cover. Sags, I just say this. You know, it makes really very little sense to me that this Hall of Fame is reserved for players and head coaches. When a lifetime assistant like Tom, well, dude, you do anything for 62 years, you should be in every single Hall of Fame that you want to be in. And when you do it as quality as Coach Moore did, we need to find a way that this, not just their own wing on a different part. I'm not in that damn Hall of Fame next to the assistant head coach, because you find me a head coach like Tony Dungy, who was with Coach Moore. You find me Chuck Knoll. If they were all alive sitting in the room, say, is he a Hall of Fame coach? Not a one of them is going to say different because of what he did for their franchises and the players on them. Sags, yes or no, and your impact or your thought process on, do assistant coaches belong in the Hall of Fame?
Yeah, 100%. It's a part of the game. Like, that's what we all want to remember, the biggest impact in football when you look at the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Assistant coaches are part of this process.
A big part too, right?
Yes.
I mean, you're begging for the right offensive coordinator or defensive coordinator on your team. And when you don't get him, you say, we're shitty, and you fire him. How impactful do they got to be? He's done it for 62 years.
You have to put, and Tom Moore is the perfect guy to be the first one. So, you know, if it's, you know, if do coaches have to wait 5 years like players to get in? I'm not sure, you know, I haven't really looked into it, but if he has to, like, he shouldn't have to wait 5 years. He's 87 years old. I mean,
agreed.
Next year, he should be part of the Pro Football Hall of Fame class.
Well, you might want to give him equity in the Hall of Fame as many years as he's been in it. He should get to choose when he goes in. No doubt.
Just the fact you said he coached Terry Bradshaw all the way to Tom Brady at the end. It's just like,
think about
insane.
That. Yeah. Ever has been a consultant, still coaching Baker Mayfield?
Yep.
I mean, think about that, Segs. Mayfield wasn't in the womb for 30 more years or whatever it was when Tom started. That wasn't that long, but you get the point. It's crazy, isn't it?
Yeah.
How good he's been for so long. Yeah.
Yeah, it's time for them to put assistant coaches, and you mentioned like Buddy Ryan, you know, guys, just because you're not a good head coach, maybe you get a job and you know, it lasts 3 years and you don't have much success, but then you go right back to being a DC or an offensive coordinator or a special teams coordinator. We've seen great special teams coordinators over the years. That Dave Taub, you know, has been arguably the best special teams coordinator, arguably of all time. So yeah, it's definitely time to put assistants in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. All right, Sean, last night, it kind of went in a way that we didn't think could happen. This Miami Ole Miss game, 31-27, Miami gets the win. Carson Beck leads them down in the final 2 minutes, gets the go-ahead touchdown late. Ole Miss gives themselves a chance on that little pop Hail Mary they tried at the end. But, I mean, all I have to say is kudos to Carson Beck because he played brilliant. So my first question to you about this game is, did you think there was any chance that Carson Beck was going to come out and be this guy in this game to get the U back to the national championship?
I would not have bet on it because I think I would have gone in thinking it may cost me money. Now, he's seen a lot of football. What's he, 6-7 years into college football, sixth or seventh year? But I'm not going to shrink him that way. I stand up, and I don't know if apology is the way, but respect, because the last 2 weeks he's done some things in big moments, a great run that ran through somebody to get a first down in their previous playoff game, and then this. Sags, it not only didn't turn out the way we thought, the victory did. I picked Miami I said 3.5. I picked Miami to win. I said it close to a field goal game. So that turned out the way it was. Yet my heart was still, when they were driving down, thinking, go ahead, Trinidad, go do your thing, and let's see how this turns out. But there will still be a lack of respect on the belief in Miami. With this game last night, and one, I said, for Ole Miss to win, Trinidad Chambliss has to be the best player on the field. The Lacey injury for a minute came back in after the big run, but still, we're not making that excuse either. At moments, Chambliss was, and you could see Sags, I really love his skill set, I do, but he was not the best player in the game. No. Ole Miss didn't win. On the other side, I said, Ole Miss front seven has to dominate the game and take over if they're going to win. If you're relying on your quarterback or offense, that's not set up for that unless it's a big Tony play or what have you, right? Well, and he made a few of those. But I said that, and guess what they didn't do? Their front seven, the Miami defense, did not physically dominate or wear out Ole Miss. So now you're like, okay, what's the next one that you knew couldn't happen if you wanted to win and you were the opposing team? That Carson Beck couldn't be the best player on the field. And in true Segs, whether it was flashy or not, the way he played last night, and this is a big compliment to him, while there's a lot of factors, you know, with a great screen run after the catch and bad tackling by Ole Miss and that unbelievable speed by the freshman Tony, it's incredible to watch some of these young talent. Dude's supposed to be a senior in high school. Okay, yeah. He reclassified, which is
well,
sick.
I saw someone tweet, Tony was 11 years old when Carson Beck got to Georgia.
Yes, yes. And now he's throwing screens to him, so a little bubble or a little hit screen so he can take it to the house and go well, and they don't tackle. But Segs, he came through like a veteran supposed to play for you to win, because even the way it turned out, if he plays average, they lose.
Yeah.
They would have lost. His feet, not just the touchdown at the end, and his awareness to go through his reads, step up, and then slide by feeling it and run it in. Underrated feat by Carson Beck. So he's made a play or two or more these first two playoff games. Made a couple the first game, but made more in this game. Accurate throw to Tony for the score. Moving him down the field. Made a couple big, that deep dig route late in the game down the middle. Segs that got him down there. Huge throw. So in truth, the best player last night on offense, I didn't say the most explosive, but the most consistent, the reason why we didn't know if Miami could do it offensively, we were curious, can he be the reason? He was the reason.
He was.
So good on Carson Beck, good on Miami, and they just, you know, getting a guy get kicked out on defense, the safety on a hit, and yeah, getting penalized, and then battling back from that, and you're thinking, oh, man, what's good? And they stayed, and he was poised and did exactly what he needed to do. Ole Miss is going to hate the fact that they missed some tackles in space, and this they just are. And Pete Golding knew going in, their biggest problem would be the space part of it if we didn't tackle well. And at times they didn't. But the most consistent, best player in the game last night, offensively, was Miami's quarterback and Carson Beck. Good on him, because it wasn't dominated physically by either team, made some mistakes. He didn't make the big mistake that killed him. I know there was a pick, Segs, but it could have buried others. Guess what he did last night? Didn't let it, and still had the poise to go down after, you know, they went down and scored, take them down and put them in position to win, and they did. Kudos and a great compliment to Carson Beck and his performance last night.
He even the one interception he threw was a tip ball
that
his guy wide open and the ball tipped.
He made the right decision of where to throw it, Segs. It just somebody got in the way, and that happened.
Someone made a good play. I mean, that happens. And the other thing that I thought Miami did really well, we heard after the game from Mario Cristobal that a lot of their guys had this flu that's going around all over the country that is, you know, knocking people out. We saw Mark Fletcher in the middle of the game really struggling. You could tell he did not feel well. At one point, it looked like he was throwing up on the sidelines. But what did he do? He still carried the ball, 22 times for 133 yards. Chamar Brown came in, gave him 14 carries. That's 36 carries. And I said yesterday, Mark Fletcher should carry the ball 25 times. Your next guy should be 10. Well, you hit that 35. It didn't quite do the 25 and 10, but huge for Miami.
Who won the attempts game in the running game last night?
Oh, but Miami. Well, when you count in sacks and stuff, they count that as a carry. 51 total for Miami, 21 total for
Ole Miss. That's my point. Segs, 30 more touches carrying the football? 30 more? You know how I feel about that stat. And one other thing, what did I say? Ole Miss wants to run 90 plays, Segs. 80 to 90 plays, right? Yep. Up in there. Who ran 90 plays right around there last night? Miami did.
Miami.
And you know why Miami's run game was even more efficient last night? Is because, not the other way around, is because Carson Beck's efficiency last night gave them room to run, because the guy was pretty damn sharp for the most part the night. So Carson Beck, we haven't said it a lot this year, And since he left Georgia, he's had his moment. Don't misunderstand. He's played some good football, but consistently good football. Last night, he was a big reason why, not just a stopgap that hold it over and hope the defense dominates and the run game dominates. He made some plays with his arm and his feet, and here's the winning touchdown, to get in, and his awareness last night. He looked like a guy who's been in this moment, and at Georgia, he was in plenty of those type of moments.
And what did we say about the run game, too, yesterday, especially with Miami wanting – that's why I wanted that many carries. Miami held the ball almost 41 and a half minutes of this game. 41 and a half.
Segs, remember we said two going into quarters. Yes, if you can hold the football, and I said if they're doing, we said if they're getting first downs and running effective that way, what does it do? It shortens the game.
Yeah.
Because the ball stays in bounds. And when you shorten the game, you limit what? All the possessions Ole Miss wants to run.
Yep.
And that was a brilliant by them. But the brilliance last night was Miami's versatile and offensive attack and the passing attack that allowed get Tony in space, get the run game going, and to run 50 plus times. That's physical dominance by the offense, not the defense.
And let's be real, Miami dropped 6 interceptions, like clear, not just like, oh, I got a hand on it. No, like interception balls in the hand, in both hands, and they dropped them. I mean, it felt like, I think it was 6 times. I mean, 6 legit times where you could say that should have been an interception. Not oh, good play. Could have picked it off, but just knocked it down. No, these were interceptions in their hands.
Ole Miss's offense wasn't quite as sharp last night, Segs. They did some really good things. Hell, they did the over hits. I mean, good gracious. It was impressive that I would have never thought, especially with the start. But you gotta give them credit. Miami did enough defensively, but the defense is going to have to get more potent.
Yeah.
They're going to have to – in the next game, if they're going – whoever they play with those two quarterbacks, the pass rush will even be – even though Chambliss is really damn good, you're probably not going to get by with giving up a lot, you know, with hitting the over. And we thought if the over hits, Ole Miss wins. Everything – and that's why Miami won last time.
Yeah.
Better offense, more plays, ran the football more, 50-plus times. They hit in the 30s, I mean, which was awesome. And so they did exactly what the other guys that we didn't expect to make the huge impact, sans Tony, and they did it. And their offense was a big reason why they won. And we haven't said that a ton this year, Segs. You and I both know it. I'm talking about consistency of it. And here you are, Miami going in. And I wouldn't discount them regardless of who they play at the next time. Yeah. I'm just telling you, I wouldn't.
So we have Miami headed to the national championship. We got Oregon, Indiana tonight. Sean, I saw this, and then we'll move on. Since the NIL kicked in, and it's just been a few years, but since NIL officially kicked in, teams in the national championship, Michigan, Ohio State, Washington, Notre Dame, Miami, and Indiana or Oregon. Why do I say those 7 teams? Because there's not one SEC team in that group. And so you're seeing it all over Twitter and all over the TV. Even after the game, Kirk Herbstreit was talking about it. Are we starting to see that decline where, you know, we all heard all those years, oh, the SEC is paying players. The SEC is playing. Well, now everybody can. And it seems like it's brought the SEC back to the pack. And over the last 3 years, not one SEC team has been in the national championship.
Segs, I'll tell you this. Is, yeah, you put Miami in because they're the 7th waiting on the 8th is what you're saying, right, Segs, basically?
Yeah.
Or, right? Waiting on
Indiana, Oregon, or one. Not, yeah.
Doesn't matter. Neither one of them are in the SEC,
right?
Segs, you know what's crazy about this, too, is I'm 100 – now, he may refute this, but from my vantage point, I'm just going to give you my honest opinion. That very thing you just said about NIL and, you know, like I said, Indiana's never going to lead NIL, but we've gotten also back to – we best better have good players that buy into what we're doing while they're here. That's one. But what you said is exactly why a guy like Nick Saban's not coaching college football anymore. He's healthy, sharp as could be, competitive, all that. You can hear the spice in his voice when he's broadcasting. He left on top. He may not have won the national title the day he left, but he left on top. But I will tell you this, Siggs. Saban will tell you, and a lot of people will, well, Saban's a phenomenal coach. Isn't that the perfect example of a guy who understands the importance of ball hogging analysts and great coaches, assistant coaches, it validates our NFL point about Tom Moore. You need great coaches around him, right? Two things Nick Saban did in his career that made him the very best. A guy who wanted to win 17 to 14 games had to adapt and get the Kiffins and Sarkisians, offensive coordinators, to play the things he hated. I don't want people to play fast and run 90 plays. I want to slow it down. Well, then he hired guys that do that because he knew you have to adapt and adjust. That's one. Two is his advantage was always the best recruiter in the world. Could go in and win the mom and the dad over and the kid over. Alabama sell, and then it got to the point where Alabama itself sold it, but he knew the greatest closer in college football history to get the guys he wanted, right? And if you're not worth it, you're not bringing value, sorry, somebody else is going to play. Cold-blooded, but the right way. When NIL came into play, Segs, you know what that is? It took his advantage out of it. The advantage he had when he's here, that he had that great, really good recruiters here, but he's able to step up because the greatest closer. We got a lot of good recruiters, but boom, one more of him. That was his advantage. And and now the great equalizer came and said, oh, dude, wait a second. We're in the Big Ten. That guy you usually got, because Nick Saban can recruit anything. He could sell sand to a doggone surfer in Hawaii who's sitting on the beach and owns that part of the beach, and he could still sell it to him. Then he'd have him buy it back and sell it to him again at a higher price for Nick Saban. And that's a great thing. Sales doesn't always mean you're doing it negatively. He was great at selling what needed to be done. When you decided that money was going to be a bigger factor than just being able to recruit the kid the right way, Nick, you throw his hands up in the air. It's like, this is getting out of hand because it stole his advantage. There's no doubt. I'm sure he didn't want to deal with all the shit as well.
Right.
But there's no doubt that when that happened, now you start to see everybody else. Hell, dude, Texas Tech. And I think it's a great program. But look what Texas Tech's done to equalize them and take them above a lot of schools because they're willing to pay and invest in it. And now we know these kids are impacted by money. Take a look at Washington and anywhere else when guys are starting one place and leave for more money without any legacy or investment in a program because it's like, I'm getting paid more, I'm out. So with that, and relationships aren't as established as much. I believe that's a big reason why Nick Saban left, is because he knew the great equalizer was no longer, the impact of his recruiting now was going to be brought up, that the money now was going to impact his ability to close things out. And hence why you can be in the Big 12, Big 10, somewhere else. Hell, you can be in even a smaller, if you got money, there's no stopping you. And that has been proven with NIL. And I think that's a big reason why Nick is sitting on a set now as opposed to coaching.
Moving on, you just mentioned the kid from Washington that was going to leave for more money. We do have a resolution in that. Damon Williams will return to Washington. He made that announcement last night. Coach Jed Fish had a statement saying that we will accept him back. Now we need to start, begin rebuilding the trust with him, his teammates, his coaching staff, his, you know, the people in the building, the University of Washington. And I think with Jed Fish, it's just saying, okay, he's still a kid. He made a mistake. His agent left him yesterday, as we talked about on the show, made a rash decision. Maybe he came back, you know, hat in hand, just being like, hey, you know,
hand
up, my bad. But Coach Fish says he will accept him back and begin the rebuilding the trust that has been lost. You agree with it?
So he cheated on a test. The instructor caught him, not literally, figuratively. Cheated on a test. The instructor caught him, and now I'm gonna apologize so I can stay in school. It's the same thing here. The only reason the kid came back is because Washington wasn't gonna let him go. He didn't want to miss out on his first $4 million. I don't know the kid from Adam, but you can. I'm not here to tell you. I'm just not. I'm so tired of us overprotecting and coddling this shit. I'm sorry. I wouldn't have wanted him back because he's not all in. He's not Washington. I'm going to guarantee you, as we sit here now, I'll walk to the University of Washington if they're the national champions next year. How's that? You want to come with me? We'll raise money for charity.
Yep. Sounds good.
I'll walk to Seattle from wherever we want. Now, it may be from Spokane and not from Texas. I didn't say where I'm starting my walk from. Point is that I'm sure he's a good kid. I'm sure he's got teammates that love him. And the bags, it's legal. No, what he was trying to do was not legal. He had already signed. It was against rules. And he didn't want the rules to apply to him. Sure, a good kid and the rest of it. wants to call me, I'd coach him on the side. My point is, I wouldn't want him back because you can't tell me that, oh, that he made this decision. All right, take it off. What if Washington says, sure, dude, do whatever you want? Would he be there? If they would have said, no, we're not going to resist, he could transfer whenever he wants. Good luck to him. Like our guy beforehand, Kenny Dillingham did with Sam Leavitt. No, I wish him luck. What if this was the case here and Washington would have said, giving him carte blanche to leave? You think he'd still be in Seattle playing at Washington there, right on the lake on Saturdays? You think he'd still be there?
No.
Okay, so basically it's like the guy, like I said, hey, I stole a car, but I got caught, so let me apologize. If nobody catches, you ain't apologize. If they'd let him go, he'd be gone playing, whether it's LSU or somewhere else. So to me, I'm sure he's a good kid. When it came to this decision, I'm trying to compartmentalize. There is no way on God's green earth that he's back for the right reasons. He's back because there's $4 million and he's the automatic starting quarterback there. That's why he's back, because they wouldn't let him go. So, nah, Coach Jed Fish can do what he wants. He's the man there and he trusts him, and he's around him, so I'm sure he's a good kid. But you mentioned, right, and he's a good player. What did he mention in that? We got to gain the trust back. That's a lot of fixing. Hey, yeah, but how is he? What's he going to do? Apologize because he wanted to leave after he had signed? Is that the guy you want leading your group into the next one? Yes, he's a kid. But if it could take $4 million, he's no longer an amateur. He's a friggin' pro. Sorry, no compassion, nothing. And I'd let whoever the backup is come in and compete and get some snaps too. I don't even know who the backup is right now at the University of Washington. But for me, nah, man, while I'll forgive him, I'm not forgetting. And I'm not the one who now has to reach out and fix it with him. He's the one who has to extend the olive branch to his teammates and players. He's the one who has to do his due diligence to be welcomed back to a really good program that can win a national title. But my point is, if everybody's not all in, you can't. And he's back there for the wrong reasons, not for the right ones. Because if they'd have lifted that ban of him transferring, he would not be there. And you and I both know it. So there you go. I'm sorry. We've done too much coddling. And if they want to be treated like big boys, then they get to be punished like big boys too. He's got a lot to do with trust. So to me, if that position's not all bought in, you're going to have a hard time, Dominic. They ain't winning the Big Ten next year. Let me just put that to you right now.
Yeah. Switching over to the NFL coaching carousel.
Yeah, who do they? Segs, who do they? How many? What's their travels? Let's see. How many teams did we add for the Pac-12 and the Big Ten? Oregon, Washington, SC, and UCLA, right? That was the first four, right?
Yes.
Yeah. We'll be in what, year three of that next year?
Yeah.
Okay. And Fish knows the Big Ten. I just, Segs, if you don't have buy-in from a head coach or don't have buy-in from some key players, he'll tell you he's bought in, but is he? I think that's the question we got to find out. But I'm not out on the kid as a human, as a player, but I'm not sure I would have wanted him back because he showed his true colors when the money rose. And I get it for a young kid, but I can't treat him like a kid because we're paying him $4 million at Washington and he signed, which tells me he's got that bail in his heart. That bails in the DNA to bail out on something that looks better, that the hotter girl at the dance was going to give you, was going to be around. So you go, but her personality sucked. That's exactly what happened. You went through it and you attacked leaving before you knew all the ramifications. And that's where I'm going to go back. He went back because it was the best opportunity because Washington wouldn't let him leave. And you and I both know it.
Yeah, for sure. Another quarterback made some headlines last night. Jackson Dart on the sideline at Ole Miss Miami, obviously an Ole Miss alum, played quarterback there just last the season before.
Looks like
last.
A dork there. I like it though. Mr. Studious. I like it.
But if you read his lips, he says, I don't know, Harbaugh or Stefanski, but I don't know. That's what the lip readers are saying. He says, everybody's assuming the person he's talking to asked, hey, who's the next coach of the New York Giants, and he clearly says Harbaugh or Stefanski. Now, he also threw in there, but I don't know. He's coming off his rookie year. I don't think he has much say in who the next coach is. Maybe he's saying who he hopes. Maybe he's saying who he's hearing from his GM, Joe Shane. So I don't know, but it definitely made some headlines last night. That video was going viral all over the internet. And it makes sense. Harbaugh and Stefanski both make a ton of sense for the New York Giants. And to be honest, those should be their top two options right now, in my opinion. So I kind of like it for the Giants, if you're a Giants fan, that he's on the sideline saying Harbaugh or Stefanski.
I think people are reading too much into this. He's a rookie quarterback who doesn't know any more than you do about this quarterback, about the head coach situation. Just like any of us. Sean, who's going to be the next USC head coach if Lincoln leaves? I don't know. I would have said Jack Del Rio or Kyle Whittingham 5 years ago, right? 3 years ago. Yeah. I know. Well, Sean, he plays there. Listen, I understand player empowerment hits. There's no GM in the world that's going down to rookie and say, hey, even though they think they want say in it, they're not hiring Stefanski or Harbaugh based on Jackson Dart's opinion. The key will be who the offensive coordinator is that he works with every day. So while they say it, he's probably woke up, I don't know, Harbaugh, Stefanski, hell, what would I know? Now, if that guy had been in the league 15 years and wore 12 in New England, I'd say he probably has a little more insight of what the decision is, or the dude who's 42 play quarterback in Pittsburgh, he'd probably get a little better idea. A rookie, he doesn't know any more than the dude standing next to him other than he's a Giant, and he's probably mentioned the two names that seem like they'd be pretty cool. He could have said five more names, I'm sure. So I'm not reading into this. I don't believe that the ownership or, you know, the Mara family or the GMs come down and say, hey, Jackson, it's going to be one of these two guys. Because if it was, guess what he would have said? I don't know yet, but I got some ideas. He just said it is about as uninformed as anybody else who goes on Twitter or social media and hears all the rumors. Right. And why wouldn't those two guys be at the top of the list? I just think it's a dude being innocent, probably hoping he gets a good offensive guy to lead him. But in truth, Jackson Dart doesn't know what's going on. He was probably more in tune to seeing if his Ole Miss Rebels could pull this one off last night. So I just hope somebody good coaches him, because that kid right there can play some football right there. And he's tough as a tough son of a bitch, too.
Hopefully they can teach him to slide or not use his head as a battering ram. Lions reach out to Mike McDaniel for their open OC spot. Makes a lot of sense. He has, you know, Jahmyr Gibbs there, which is basically kind of a carbon copy to Devin Achane down there in Miami. Just fast, very good running back. I think Achane might be the better overall, just like pure running back. But when you talk about speed, getting the ball to Jahmyr Gibbs, he can do everything. Jahmyr Gibbs in a Mike McDaniel offense would be a lot of fun. And Dan Campbell could do a lot worse to try and get this offense back going after firing John Morton just a couple days ago.
So question for me is, do I like this hire if they do?
Would you like Mike McDaniel as your OC if you're Detroit?
Sure.
Or would you rather him be somewhere else?
No, I think it's great, because the one thing Detroit has that is his specialty, and he can even enhance it, is the run game. He's a run game expert. He was a run game expert in San Francisco. They ran the ball pretty well and necessary there. The one thing I want Mike to do, and if he's just designated the coordinator – and realizes that he's just watching that instead of the head coach calling plays and having to do all of that, he can get back to focusing on, quite frankly, what really is his expertise, coaching offensive football. And let Dan take care of all the pomp and circumstance and the grind. And Dan admitted that he didn't coach as well as he needed to. We heard Todd Monken say that, how he coached Lamar Jackson as well. He didn't coach like he needed to, relationship wise. This gives Mike the reason why he got the job in the first place: offensive expertise, Shanahan tree, whose expertise in the run game, and he's got a couple good cats to do it with too. Now, so you add the finesse, they've already got physicality up front, so that takes away some of his finesse personality and realize the run, do it, and you've got great perimeter people. I think it's a great hire. He, Cliff Kingsbury, 6-1, half dozen of the other. I don't know if even Cliff's situation, but yesterday I'd mentioned, well, he's a guy who maximizes it at least as a coordinator for a second. But if you're looking for a guy who will be easy fit, Mike McDaniel will not miss a coaching cycle. It'll just be missing it as a head coach, in my opinion.
Yeah, you just mentioned that Todd Monken basically took accountability for the Ravens offense for how he coached Lamar Jackson. Let's listen to exactly what Todd Monken had to say about this.
End of the fair thing to say, everyone had a hand in things. Is that?
I don't know how else you can say it, because everybody's going to want a hand when it goes great. I mean, the year before, I didn't hear anybody. We all had a hand in it. We had a bunch of guys on offense that had career years: Rashad Bateman, Zay Flowers, the tight end, Lamar, the O line. We were healthy the whole year.
Yeah.
And we all get to be a part of that, and we should.
Yeah.
But as I always tell the coaches, just like I would tell the players, you can't get all the credit when we do well and just exonerate yourself from the blame when it doesn't go that way. That is so ridiculously like out there that I can't even live in that world. I can't live in that world. I haven't gotten to where I'm at living in that world. I haven't. You know what? I didn't coach Lamar well enough. I didn't have as good a relationship as I could have. I didn't do the things that we needed this year to win enough games to give ourselves a chance. And I believe that. I'm not just saying that because I'm on your show and I'm going to fight like hell to fix it. I'm going to fight like hell for the next job I get, and I'm going to root like hell for the Ravens.
You know,
what a novel concept. And most coaches are usually pretty good at that. He gets it. We want everybody to tell us how great we are and get a contract extension and threaten to go to another place, and they pay you more money when you're a coach when things are going good. But when you get the shit kicked out of you, it's not just the players. And it's also not just the players who win the games for you. Todd Monken's exactly right. He is going to get hired again as well. And the thing that I found, and I do believe he means it sincerely, that, you know, sometimes you go on a show and take blame because it looks good on the optics. Look at that coach taking blame. I believe Coach Monken sincerely believes it because this is a guy who knows how to win. He's got a couple of rings as a national champion, as a coordinator at Georgia, and then all of a sudden comes to the NFL and gave Lamar some really good help with some good seasons. Yet, we know it's a very short-lived thing, the not-for-long part of it, and they didn't get it done right. And if you don't continue to foster proper relationships and immerse yourself, it's like anything. Once we have success, the longer the success goes, the more maybe we take for granted that, oh, I don't have to put the time in. No, that's when you got to put more time in to sustain it. And sometimes the relationships get a little skewed. Money gets involved. Another guy, an injury, maybe a confrontation. How do you get back from it? All those things that Coach Monken's been great at. And he'll be great again somewhere else, whether he goes with John Harbaugh his next place or somewhere else. Or somebody in college says, man, I need somebody that knows how to understand the two-dimensional quarterback that can run and throw and knows what winning's about. He's really good. But what makes him great and even better is the fact that he recognizes that with winning goes success, and with losing, that a finger should be pointed at Monken, at John Harbaugh, at Lamar Jackson, at a lot of people. And it happens. And you got to take it. And that's part of this business. One day you're the hero. The next day they want to get rid of you and do. And here we are. And Coach Monken, I think he's 100% correct. Enjoy the fruits of your labor because they don't last very long sometimes in football. But also realize, for his career, Monken, and I do believe he's rooting for the Raiders. There's a lot of relationships. You realize in your career that you've got to use negativity as growth. Even when you've got all that success, you're only as good as what happened now. Because right now, people are questioning, well, do I want to hire Todd Monken as my offensive coordinator? And somebody will. And just 2 years ago, we were calling him as good offensive coordinator and assistant coach as we had in the league, getting Lamar in position to win. They didn't accomplish the two things. Another contract extension for all of them and winning a Super Bowl. And they made a change. And nobody's above that. And Coach Monken knows that.
Yeah, it's still surprising to look back and where the Ravens have been over these last, you know, handful of seasons and how good they've been. But like you said, not ultimately getting to the top, not getting to the Super Bowl, and not winning a Super Bowl with Lamar Jackson at quarterback. But if you would have told me 2 years ago, yeah, in just 2 years, John Harbaugh is going to be fired and Todd Monken's going to be fired and Lamar will still be there and they'll be looking for their next head coach, I would have called you crazy because, you know, I would have had them winning 11, 12 games every year, being in the playoffs, fighting for the number one seed, fighting against the Chiefs and the Bills, you know, with Mahomes and Josh Allen and that great trio, throw in Joe Burrow and a few others. And I thought the AFC was just going to be so much fun for years. And here we are, Chiefs out, Ravens out, Harbaugh's not in Baltimore anymore, and they're looking for their next head coach. And will it? I mean, it's always grass is not always greener on the other side. You get rid of a very, very good coach and John Harbaugh, you don't know what's coming next.
Right. And doesn't it validate that very small margin between the great teams and the bad ones? I'm not saying Baltimore's bad. They fall as the tweener this year. But what an injury, some disagreement, or not fostering, you know, the relationships in the building, whatever it is, and maximizing the building, that the difference, like I've always said, and I'll say it again, 6 to 8 plays, a couple good players, and a quarterback's performance, the difference between the number one seed Seattle and a team that's going to be picking first. That it really is the difference. And it's a week-to-week thing. And you saw it, how quickly Like I said, at this time last year, Cliff Kingsbury in Washington was as hot a commodity as there was. Oh, he's going to be a head coach again. Now we're sitting here at a year later, and he's out of a job. Jaden Daniels has been hurt, and we don't know where he's going to end up. And it's not going to be, I wouldn't think, as a head coach. So see, and Todd Monken, same way. When Lamar's winning the MVP and this team's getting into January, it's like, man, we're close. And now that whole thing, the whole all new regime coming in there. So it goes quickly. And that's why it's not when you're bad that you got to work to get better. It's when you're good, which is true, but it's even greater is when you're good in order to stay there, you got to work even harder. And sometimes people take a sigh. I don't know if that happened in Baltimore, but obviously in the building, it got stale. And that's why you make a change.
Yeah, for sure. All right, before we get to our six-pack of picks and kind of break down our college football game tonight, our last semifinal, and then our weekend of NFL matchups. DJ Lagway, young quarterback from Florida. Billy Napier fired during the season. John Summerall comes in. DJ Lagway decides to transfer. Well, he's transferring to Baylor, where, you know, from his home state of Texas. And do you like the fit of DJ Lagway to Baylor? Does it prop them up in a way that you think, okay, they can really compete in the Big 12 now and maybe, you know, start sneaking their way towards Texas Tech in the top of that conference?
If it's the healthy, good Lagway we saw when he left, Willis? We're here in Willis, Texas, and kicked ass and was one of the, you know, the player of the year or so and one of the top recruits in the country when he went to Florida. Yeah, it brings some value to the program. This is his highly recruited, I don't know, a player, maybe even more highly recruited coming out, but have they had a guy with this kind of wow factor since Robert Griffin III when it comes to just the pub? He's in state. They're going to love him. He elevates the position. Got to stay healthy, but yes, he's a great kid, but his ability to throw it and Baylor was in consideration. But remember now, they couldn't sew him up the first time around and now they get him. So yeah, it's an upgrade for them. And then, you know, he elevates and what he does, that does is maybe a player wants to transfer there. Maybe all of a sudden the NIL goes up because they say, we got a chance. Let's add a few more players to the roster. Yes. Anytime you get a guy who, if you recall, his freshman year, as he gets in there and starts playing, what did everybody say? This is a future top five pick in the NFL. And now he's playing somewhere else. Dave Aranda, Baylor, good place. There's a great following there. He's not far from home. And I know this is a bummer to say, but your schedule is going to be a little easier than it was in the SEC. Not saying he'd shy away from that. But Baylor, it's a chance for him to regain what we know DJ Lagway has. He can move better than people think. And he can rip it, and he's a great kid. So I root for his success. This is a definite upgrade for Baylor, which there'll be some collateral effect on this in a good way for Baylor and players.
Yeah, and then lastly, USC quarterback Houston Longstreet has officially entered the portal. I thought, because we talked about it, what was it, last week I think we talked about it, or maybe early this week we talked about it, and it felt like, okay, it had been a few days. Maybe he's starting to rethink it, but officially goes in this morning into the portal. Tough loss for USC, but Jaden Maiava is still coming back and he will be a very good player for the Trojans next year.
This will end up being the most underrated loss at that position in the transfer portal. I know the Levitts and the guys, because he's a five-star guy that just hasn't played much. When he has, he's been successful. There are not a lot of people outside that area know a lot about Sags. They just don't. But I'm going to tell you, in a time when two-dimensional quarterbacks who can throw good timing and have great feet matter big time in not only in college sports, but in the NFL, I'm just going to tell you that this is going to end up being somebody's going to gain a lot. And hopefully the backup now at USC will be prepared, because you are two games of a backup away from running yourself right out of a playoff again. This kid can play. I'm just telling you he can. And when all is said and done, I fully believe we'll look back and say one of the most underrated losses and really good gains of the offseason is Longstreet playing somewhere else for whoever gets him. This is a bummer because I think the kid's a starter in college football that's backing up a guy who had a really good season this year.
And this kind of goes to where we're at in college football, because you look at kids that like this, five-star, we don't know where he's going to go. He's kind of coming in a little bit later in the portal. You know, it's been, what is it, today the ninth? It's been open for a week. So he's kind of officially getting in later. We don't know where he ends up. And we've seen kids, hell, leave USC. The young kid that's still in college, Malachi Nelson, 5-star, leaves USC. I think he's going to his fourth school.
12 places or something.
Yeah. So, I mean, again, as I say with the Ravens, the grass isn't always greener. It's not always greener for these young quarterbacks that say, like, oh, no, I'm going to go somewhere and play. And it doesn't always work out because you may end up at a school that's not as good or very good. And then, Jade, you didn't just kind of wait your turn like, say, Arch Manning, who's now the starter at Texas, going to come back next year. That could have been Longstreet next year at USC with Lincoln Riley with a chance to put his mark on that program. Now he might end up at, I don't know where, we'll see, but there's not too many openings right now in college football at the quarterback position.
Who's coaching LSU? Who's quarterback in LSU next year?
Well, there's no one right now.
Okay, now, let's say Sam Leavitt got offended by what happened and decide LSU ain't for him because he doesn't
Sam
trust
Leavitt is going to visit Miami, I think it's said tomorrow.
Because Carson Beck will be done at the end of this year. So I'm just saying, Sigs, because now that you've opened up that can of worms at LSU because of all the coverage, if you're Sam Leavitt, don't you want to open up the can of worms to leave people in? I'm just going to tell you, and I don't know if it's going to happen. I don't have any special insight. But I know what Lane Kiffin did with the former USC transfer, who has good feet and an explosive talent. Yep. So he helped make him a first-round draft pick, who was pretty good, and gave him a chance in Jackson Dart. Obviously, we know Lane's background. He knows what Lincoln Riley does, and he knows what it is, and he understands that. I'm just telling you, you're going to do a lot worse than – well, let me ask you this. Two quarterbacks in Ole Miss thrived under this last year as well, mm-hmm. right? Chambliss feels like a similar player, really good feet and can throw it. Longstreet – I'm just telling you, if you lose out on the big ones, if you think Raiola's the guy or if you think Leavitt's the guy, they already got, you know, Cincinnati's quarterback in Texas Tech, mm-hmm. and now Damon Williams going back. If you get to and now Lagway at Baylor, if you're Lane Kiffin and you trust what you know about quarterbacks, even though the nation doesn't know enough about Husan Longstreet, he will thrive there if you were to go get him. I'm just telling you, he will. So, and you've had success. Maybe, just maybe, that's a place. I don't know. But I can tell you this. Somebody's going to get him and love him if you coach him right. I believe that fully.
It's going to be interesting to see where the young five-star
former. And he ain't going to a Division II school. Okay. No. You and I both know that. Okay.
But, like, was it Malachi Nelson ended up at, like, UTEP or something for a year?
Yeah, and
then. Yeah. So, I mean, it's the transfer portal's tricky. It's tricky, even if you are considered one of the better players in it. All right, let's get to our six-pack of picks. We'll kind of break these games down as we go real quick. But let's start in college. Tonight, we got the Peach Bowl. We got Oregon. We got Indiana. We got the rematch. Indiana went out to Autzen, won in Oregon in a really, really fun game. And I expect this game to be very similar down in Atlanta. It's going to be fun. We got arguably the two best quarterbacks in the country, and Dante Moore and Fernando Mendoza, who obviously won the Heisman. What's your big key for each team here that you say Oregon must do this to win this game or Indiana must do this to win this game?
The Indiana Hoosiers played offensive and defense combined this year as consistent, and so did the team they're playing, as good as anybody in the country on both sides. They didn't just win offensively and got by on defense. We've seen the most underrated group in the entire playoff is Indiana's defense. Indiana's got good defense. That may be the most important part of this game. If they come out of this game and Indiana's defense can be the reason Indiana wins this game. I'm just telling you, Sigs, they can. So that's a huge one for me. Secondly, I understand all that it's tough to beat a team twice and all that. I just know this. There is nothing fake about the Indiana Hoosiers being the number one team in the country. They've earned it, and they are. They buy in, beat you running it and not throwing it a lot, beat you throwing it a lot and not running it as much, beat you with smart coaching decisions and special teams, beat you with really good defense and pressuring your quarterback and controlling the line of scrimmage. Now, Oregon on the other side, we always talk Oregon offense. Oregon's defense kicked Texas Tech's ass, okay? I'm talking about did what Texas Tech's done to everybody, beat their brains in. So the truth is, going into this game, the two most underrated parts of this game where you're like, we want to talk Mendoza, we want to talk Dante Moore. Yes, quarterbacks matter, the rest of it. But really, what do we say always has to travel in the NFL at this time of year at college football? You better play defense. Both of these teams do. It really is. It may be just as simple, Sakes, as which one of these guys throws the costly ball. I hate to say that. I know it seems like easy analysis, but I'm going to tell you, to me, it's going to be which defense makes sure neither one of those guys is the best player in the game. And I think both are capable of doing this. I think you're going to see some defensive plays made in this game. And both quarterbacks' play is going to be critical. Indiana's overall been the best team consistently in the country. And until you prove me different, regardless of what playing them twice means, Indiana is still the team to beat in this playoff. They just are. But keep an eye on the Hoosiers' defense and how they deal with Dante Moore and Dan Lanning's off his team. That they're going to be talked about less than any group in this playoff game tonight. But they may very well be the most important. And that quarterback on the left, that screen five, you can't let him have both dimensions. You just can't.
Yeah.
You have to. And Indiana's capable of doing that because nobody's talking about him, yet they keep getting stops and getting off the field. And if Mendoza's got a clean pocket all night, they're going to destroy you throwing the football. They've done it to anybody they want and everybody they want. You better pressure him somehow, some way. If it means rushing six, if it means dropping eight, and you can get pressure with three or four dropping, you better make him uncomfortable. Because even when he's uncomfortable, like taking a sack against Penn State, he's still capable of taking it the length of the field. I think Indiana's defense will be the key to the game tonight, and Mendoza's jersey being clean or not. If it's clean, Oregon's going to have a hard time winning, regardless of how good both sides of the ball has been.
Yeah, there's a couple really, really good defensive linemen on Oregon that are going to be top two-round picks this April. And those are the type of guys that have to make an impact on this game.
Everybody's going to spew offense in this game and quarterback stakes. The truth of the matter is it's the defense that has helped both of these teams travel to where they want to be tonight.
Yeah, so you got Indiana -3.5, numbers 48.5. What do you like here?
I like Oregon inside the number, but I think Indiana wins the game.
Okay.
I feel similar last night. 3.5 points, I think Oregon's going to keep it close, but – and I love the both sides of the ball with Oregon are really good. Lanning knows how to coach. But I just feel like Indiana's overall been a better consistent team. 3.5 points. Oregon will get – this is a late winning game. I believe that. I don't think anybody's blowing them out. I'll take Oregon with the points, and I'll take Indiana to win.
Okay. I like Oregon and the money line. I don't know. There's something about this Oregon team I like, and I think they'll learn – you know, they'll self-scout what they did wrong against Indiana last time, and I think they can come back and win this game. If I were choosing the number, I'd probably say the over slightly, 48.5. I like this game in the low 50s, you know, that 27-24, 28-24 type.
I don't think this game gets into the 30s unless defenses have a lot of penalties and injuries, which I hope not.
Right.
Clean game, and let's go see if these offenses can actually handle playing against these defenses. And when you got two quarterbacks of this quality, Segs, average quarterbacks become good when they're not hit, and good quarterbacks become great. And if you're really good, like both of these guys are, first-round type picks, if you don't hit them, they'll feast on you, and defense will be – it won't matter what the defense does.
All right, switching over to the NFL playoffs. We got the Rams. They're a 10.5-point favorite on the road against the Carolina Panthers. That number sits at 45.5. What are you thinking on this game here?
Which I say, I'm sorry, I was reading some. What game? I heard you. I heard the
introduction. Rams, oh, yeah. Panthers, Rams Carolina. -10.5.
Yeah. I just want to make sure.
5.5 number.
Yeah. I think the Rams are going to blow this game out of the water. I do. I have much respect to Carolina and what they do. The Rams are just better. I fully expect the Rams to, I think the Rams win by double digits. I know where they got to go to play it. I don't think that's going to matter. Give me an explosive Rams offense against this, and you may get a backdoor cover at the end. I don't think the game's in question in the second half. And before you answer that, Stags, I'm not sure, Jared, what you mean by, wow, guess you haven't Googled Coach Cignetti. I don't know. Somebody say something about Cignetti? Or both coaches are really good. Both coaches get buy-in. Both coaches win. I'm a Cignetti fan, so I'm not real sure. Yeah. What anybody said about Cignetti that would say, wow, we haven't Googled him. They're pretty good.
All right, Saturday night, you got the Packers, who are 1.5-point favorite in Chicago against the Bears. The It's the big rivalry. 44.5 is the number. What do you think in this game right now? Jordan Love is going to play. We'll see how he comes back and how he looks. But what are you thinking here? Chicago, Green Bay.
Shakes, there's part of me says, Green Bay and Love, and it's the Packers, and the Bears still don't know how to win in games like this. I'm past that. I think the Bears, as long as Caleb doesn't put them in a – he's got to play better coming out of the locker room. The offense has got to play better faster because what will get him – now, they listen, they flirted with it again last week, Sakes. They're down, come back from 16 points, tied up, chance to win, and they lost it. And then when you're playing good teams, that's what happens is you keep chasing and keep chasing. Eventually, the well runs dry, you don't have it. And as much as I love the Packers and for our guy Isaiah – And I friggin' love it, and I do, and I love the rivalry part of this. We're getting them in a wild card round in the first one, Segs. I do. I love this. I actually think the Bears are going to win the football game. But if we're watching the Bears come out and flounder the first half, I think the Bears' defense will step up. I think the Bears' offensive line controls the game. I do. I think the Bears' offensive line controls the game. Now, if you're just talking about consistency – Love's giving you more consistency, I think, than Caleb. But the explosiveness, Caleb's just got to play better to start to where they're not in a chase mode. Even though they've had success come from behind, there's only so many times you can do that against good teams. Give me the Bears in a close game at home and moving on. There's a lot to like about both teams. I just think the Bears are better right now. But if they start slow, the Green Bay Packers will beat them. You have to play four quarters against the Packers in this game.
It's going to be interesting. The Bears are going to be more healthy than they were just a few weeks back when they played the Packers. Rome Odunze is returning from his injury. He hasn't played in.
They need an explosive play out of him.
Weeks.
A couple of them.
Luther Burden will play. And then on the defensive side, you get Kyler Gordon back, who's the very good young nickel corner.
That's a huge get.
Yes.
To have him
which
back.
Is. So we'll see how healthy he looks. Yeah. I'm taking the Bears. I'm not taking the Packers, obviously.
And by the way, Jared, yeah, his Google me, all I do is win. Yes, that part. And he does at every level. All he does is win and keep winning. And I know you're joking, but I didn't know if we missed something. But, yeah, one thing I know we don't have a problem with is the coaching with Oregon and Indiana in this.
Oh, yeah.
Both know how to coach. And in this game tonight, two head coaches that get it. One's got a little more experience. But to me, it's a fast start and health for the Bears on defense. Give me the Bears offensive line controlling the game, which means keeping the quarterback upright and giving Caleb a faster start.
Yes, hopefully. All right, we got another road favorite. Buffalo Bills travel to Jacksonville to take on the hot Jacksonville Jaguars. Trevor Lawrence throwing the ball all over. Defense stepping up, playing really well. That number is a 51.5. What do you like in this game? Do you trust Sean McDermott and Josh Allen, who kind of have been up and down some of these games? You're like, yeah, they're going to win, and then, boom, they don't show up at all. I mean, what do you expect from this game and this Buffalo Bills team going against a Jags team that nobody expected to be here?
Segs, this is going to sound – I'm going against my week five gut about this. I picked Buffalo to win the whole thing at the beginning of the year. I don't feel that same way now. Now, I hate the waffle, but I'm compartmentalizing one game. If they get by this, maybe it goes back. I'm not going to pick Jacksonville to win it all. I'm still sticking with Buffalo, but because that was my preseason prediction. But I'm not picking them to win this game. Maybe I'm going against my better judgment and Superman and Josh Allen, the rest of it. To me, the Jacksonville Jaguars' overall play this year and the way they've coached it, that's one of the better surprises in the league. And I do believe Trevor Lawrence has elevated his game.
Yes.
The Jacksonville Jaguars have more ways to win than the Buffalo Bills do. Does that make sense to you? I fully believe that. Now, Josh Allen's got that unique ability that very few have, that the rest of the team can play average and he can still beat you.
Yeah.
But it's such a burden to carry every week because I don't think the Buffalo Bills defense scares Jacksonville one bit. Respect, yes. Scares them, no. Jacksonville has done the quarterback. The pass game's improved. The big play. They run it efficiently enough. They're playing. You can't get this many wins playing poor defense. It's at home. They don't get to deal with that Buffalo, the excitement, which would have been possibly another last game ever at Buffalo Stadium, right, Segs? while I love Josh Allen and I want to root for them because that's who I picked to go, and I can't believe I'm saying this after the beginning of the season where I said, I don't know, is Jacksonville tough enough? Jacksonville's tougher than we gave them credit for. I'm actually taking Jacksonville to win the game outright at home.
Wow.
And that, and it's hard for me to do because I love Allen and Buffalo, but I don't think Buffalo's a great team. I have their great moments with a great quarterback and a hell of a run game, but I think Jacksonville can move the football. I'm taking Jacksonville to win a football game at home.
All right. Well, I'm still going to probably wrongfully trust Josh Allen here. I think he's been in these situations, and yeah, he's not gotten over the hump and gotten to a Super Bowl and all that, but I really like Buffalo in this game. I think Jacksonville's been a nice story. I think, but they haven't been in these type of games. I think give me Buffalo when it comes to it.
If this game was in Buffalo, Buffalo by a couple field goals or one touchdown. Yes. That would. But I think Jacksonville is a little more confident. I think they believe more than we want to give them credit for. But I'm with you, Segs, because I picked Buffalo at the beginning of the year, like I said. But I just think Jacksonville's capable now of doing this, and I think they're going to do it. I do.
I think it'd be fun to see Jacksonville win and just kind of mix up the playoffs. All right. Then we got 49ers at Eagles. I think the most interesting game of the weekend. Philly's been playing better as of late, but 49ers offense is moving. We know they got all these injuries. Can they play enough defense? 5.5's the number, -5.5 for the Eagles, and a 44.5 over under. Give me the over in this game, and I'm going to stick with the Eagles. I think the Eagles find a way to win by more than 5.5.
Yeah, I got the Eagles winning the football game too. As much as this is usually their time, Segs. I expect them to make a few more big plays. The 49ers injuries are just eventually going to catch up to them.
Yeah.
And I think it's going to happen. The last time they went there to play them in postseason, remember Brock Purdy got hurt, went through 3 and 4 quarterback, had to kind of brought him back, and he couldn't throw it. And with all the talk, it's at home. Philadelphia is really good. They do find ways to win. I am concerned about the 49ers defense and can they get off the field and apply enough pressure. And whether you like Jalen Hurts or not, he finds a way to thrive in these type of moments. I don't think this is a big blowout by Philly. I do think I'd take the 49ers with the number, Segs. I'm with you. I think it's going to be like a 27-23 type game. I would take the over in the game. What's the number in 40s, right? Low 40s?
44.5.
Yeah, I actually think there's going to be a little more scoring. But I do like the Eagles outright to win the football game. But I would take if you're laying those points, you said 5.5, Segs. Is that what it is? I would take San Francisco. And especially if Purdy stays in the game the whole time, I just think that Philadelphia, I don't think they're going to play in February. I do think they're moving on in January. The 49ers have overcome a lot. I'm not sure they can overcome this against the Philadelphia team, but I'd like to see Philadelphia be as versatile as they've been last year. More Barkley, more do their thing, and more big plays. Jalen Hurts has to play better, and big moments seem to drive him. Give me Philadelphia at home.
Okay, and then lastly, Sunday night, we'll pick the Monday night game on Monday. Sunday night, we've got the Chargers going to New England all the way cross country to face the Patriots. Patriots are a 3.5-point favorite, a 45.5 number. I don't like the number at all. That number scares me. I wouldn't bet the number at all. But give me the Patriots. Chargers have to travel all the way across the country. They had
offensive lines a problem, Sage. It's
really bad. Now, I will say at least the Patriots aren't this world beater, just rushing the passer like crazy type of defense right now. They got to get some more players on there. But I just think the travel, everything, when you put everything in there and the way New England's played this year, just give me the Patriots to win and cover that 3.5.
If San Diego had all their offensive line and everybody healthy, when I say San Diego, L.A.
L.A.
You know, Harbaugh's approach would be kind of like normally the approach of a team that, even though Herbert's more than capable of throwing it, Harbaugh loves to shorten the games like he did at Michigan. They would wear you out, run it, mix in play action, and go. I just think New England overall gets, for a team this good, people are still like, yeah, but they keep talking schedule. They keep talking this. You're at home. I think New England wins. This of these game segs, I know this is going to sound crazy. This to me was the easiest one to pick.
Yeah,
It just is. No... I think New England's better. I know that the Chargers have some talented players, but I think the overall sum and the way they're playing, and I'm with you on the number. There's a part of me that thinks this game could end up 17-13 depending on the weather. But I also know that if they're going good, both these quarterbacks are capable of throwing 30 on you. Give me New England at home straight to cover, but also New England win the game. It doesn't matter. New England's winning. You take it however you want. I wouldn't touch the overall number as well, but I just think the Patriots are capable of moving through January. I do, in an AFC that leaves you a little baffled. I don't like the Chargers on the road in this game, even though I love Coach Harbaugh's approach to physicality, but he's running into a coach who loves physical football play too. Give me New England, and as good as Herbert potentially is and has had those moments, Drake May's a better thrower of the football. I actually trust him more in this moment. I'm taking New England.
All right. That'll do it for our six-pack of picks. That'll do it for our Friday show. Ton of football to watch this weekend. Started last night with the fun Fiesta Bowl. Miami gets the win, heads of the national championship, and they'll face either Oregon or Indiana. And that game's tonight at 6:30 Central Time, 7:30 Eastern. It's going to be a fun weekend. I got a lot of basketball. I got some volleyball this weekend. Never stop. So sports, sports, sports.
Yeah, I got to go scout about 400 players football in a tournament too, Seg. So while I'll be done by the time playoffs come on, it's still one of those days. But I'm good. Go out there and see if these high school kids can put on a show so we can get them on the radar. But other than that, it's going to be a good, fun sports weekend. And it's just so weird for me to still be talking about we're playing Monday Night Football playoff games. It's odd to me. But, hey, you do what you do. And we'll have a lot to talk about Monday, about coming out of the weekend, but also with the Pittsburgh and Houston game. Houston's better, but they're going into a place that's really tough to play. Trust me, I've been there. It's hard. Just in Pittsburgh. Can't wait to talk about that. But it'll be a fun weekend of football. One of these games is going to go completely different than the way we thought when it comes to the NFL this week. And say somebody's going to rear their head like a Carolina and shock the world. Don't know if that's going to happen, but you're going to see that.
Yep, we'll see. All right, thanks to Triple E. Thanks to Laura. Thanks to Bailey, as always. Go to YouTube, like and subscribe at Unpaved Sean Salisbury. Click yes for the notifications to when we go live every single day.
Thanks to all our peeps, man. You guys are awesome. We tell your friends to like and subscribe, but we're so grateful for you. And we love the interaction. You guys say a lot of funny and good stuff on here.
Yes, for sure. We'll be back Monday. We'll have Coach JB as always. We'll break down all these playoff games, including the college game, and we'll get you ready for the national championship and the divisional round of the NFL playoffs. We'll be back Monday, 1 p.m. Eastern, noon Central. We'll talk to you guys later. Peace.
Unpaved Sean Salisbury here for bringing authentic, real stuff to you. Hardcore opinion.
Sean Salisbury, a great NFL analyst, a former NFL quarterback.